that guilty pleasure that it, like, I don't know, maybe you were a Justin Bieber fan and you don't want anybody to know that you are a Justin Bieber fan. Like, anybody have like something they watch on TV that you're like, ooh, this is kind of my thing. I don't, it's my guilty pleasure thing. No, no one does. I don't believe. Oh, what music you listen to? What CDs would be in your CD player if I went and checked the backseat of your car? No, you are all better Christians than me. All right, so some people out there, we can imagine these fictitious people who sometimes watch things that they wouldn't want everyone to know about. Things like, you know, a soap opera, right? So from so much of my life, I prided myself on the fact that I had never watched a soap opera. Never once. Never watched a soap opera. And I thought I was super, super holy because I'd never watched a soap opera. And I knew many, many people who did. And then it was pointed out to me that WWE, or WWF as it was called back when I used to watch, is really just the male version of a soap opera. And once it was said to me, I could not get it. The overacting, the drama, the melodrama of it. I'm like, darn it, I have watched soap operas for years and I didn't even realize it because soap operas are terrible. Like, I'm sorry if that is your guilty pleasure and you just didn't want to admit it out loud. I'm sorry, the acting is terrible. You don't believe me? Watch. And even as melodramatic as that is, what we are going to see today in the book of Judges just goes off the scale. Like, it's the book of Judges, especially in the life of Samson, really starts sounding more like a soap opera than real life. So here's where we've been so far in the book of Judges. We've seen that the person we should want leading us is God. We've said this week in and week out. The fact that Israel keeps looking to men and human leaders to lead them, and that is not getting them where they want to go. We've seen that when God gives us command, we must obey 100%. 99% obedience is 100% disobedience. And we've seen them repeatedly choose to obey less than 100%, getting to a point now where it feels like they're not even trying to obey at all. And we've seen it just continue to cycle down and down to the point that in the next 2 to 3 weeks, we are just going to see Israel in a place that God never, ever intended for them to be. And recently, we've been looking at the birth and decline of this chosen Nazirite child. This is Samson. We learned his name a couple weeks ago, and we've been watching his life as he's been developing. And as he had taken this Nazirite vow that had certain restrictions on it, we saw last week he's already nullified two of those restrictions. He has already touched a dead body, and he has likely already at this point in the story drank wine or and had other grape products. Two of the things he was not allowed to do. He has just been, from the moment he shows up on the scene, gradually walking further and further from this vow that was given to God. This week, we're going to pick up right where we left off. Because last week, he was proposed to be married, and he had gone down for his wedding feast. They had gone through the 7 days of the wedding feast, and at the end, Samson had ended up so angry that he just left. He left his bride. He went home to his father's house, angry, it told us, and now we see this. After some days, at the time of the wheat harvest, Samson went to visit his wife with a young goat. And he said, I will go in to my wife in the chamber. He's like, all right, I'm going to go back and hang out with the wife. I don't know if he just forgot that he never married her or if he thought, well, we did the 7 day feast. So, I mean, good enough, right? That's close enough. She must be my wife. He's going to go down and be with his wife. He's no longer angry and he decides he wants to go spend some time with her. So he gets his goat and goes down to see his wife. But this is where it becomes a soap opera really quick. Her father would not allow him to go in. And the father said, I really thought that you utterly hated her because you left. You went home. Like you left her the night before her wedding. So I thought you hated her. So I gave her to your companion. The guy who was supposed to be his best man is now his wife's husband. I told you, soap opera through and through. Is not her younger sister more beautiful than she? Please take her instead. All right, we said it a lot last week. I'm going to try not to say it like with every single slide we look at this week. There are no good people in this story at this point. The father's solution to, oh, I accidentally gave away your wife to this other guy is, I've got another daughter. You want her instead? Like, no, this is not the way it's supposed to go. But at this point in the story, we can kind of understand, like, Samson went to a Philistine land and was trying to marry a Philistine woman. This father is only acting in accordance with the traditions of the Philistines, of non-Israelite citizens. This should not have been surprising to anybody reading it, other than the fact that Samson was even there in the first place. And Samson says to them, when he finds this out, He doesn't say, yes, I'll take her as my wife. Yes, your second daughter will do. He says, this time, I shall be innocent in regard to the Philistines when I do them harm. Remember last time he got angry, he went and he killed 30 of the Philistines so that he could pay off a bet of 30 pieces of clothing because he was so, that's the reason he went home angry, was because he had lost his bet due to the woman who was supposed to be his wife. He's saying, this time, you have done real harm. I'm going to be innocent in regard to the Philistines. The thing I think that's interesting here is what it indicates as far as what Samson's thinking was to the last time. What he's declaring is, this time I'm going to be innocent because of this thing you did, what he's saying is, last time, I wasn't all that innocent in the first place. Samson seems to understand that his reaction was not okay. His reaction this time, spoiler alert, is also not going to be okay. Because what he does, he goes and he catches 300 foxes and he takes torches and he turns them tail to tail, or ties them tail to tail, and puts a torch between each pair of tails. Okay? And when he had set fire to the torches, he let the foxes go into the standing grain of the Philistines and set fire to the sacked grain, or to the stacked grain and the standing grain, as well as the olive orchards. So Samson's like, you know what? Here's how I'm going to get even. I'm going to go get these foxes. I have seen foxes in my time. I have never caught a fox in my time. I don't know how he caught 30 foxes. But anyway, he catches these foxes, 300 foxes, even more so. Where do you keep 300 foxes? Anyway, he captures 300 foxes. He ties them. So 150 pairs of foxes with torches tied between their tails, and he sets them loose into the food stores, the grain, and the olive orchards of the Philistines. Essentially, he wipes out everything they had for food for the season. All the food that they had gathered, all the food that was still waiting to be gathered, everything that they would have needed to feed themselves, he burns to the ground. This means people in the land would have been starving to death in the coming months. They would have had no food. This is not just a matter of, hey, look at the pretty fire. This is a war crime that Samson has committed because he is angry that he didn't get his wife. And when the Philistine says, who has done this? And they said, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he has taken his wife and given her to his companion. And the Philistines came up and punished Samson severely for doing this thing that he shouldn't have done. No, that's not how Judges goes. That would be too easy. That would make sense. No, the Philistines come up and burn her and her father with fire. They're like, Samson destroyed all our food. Why did he do that? Because he didn't get to marry the woman that he left at the altar. Okay, so let's burn the woman he left at the altar and you know what, let's throw her father in with her. This makes no sense. I said soap opera, but this is more like the Wild West. See, I have friends who love Westerns. Anybody love Westerns? Yeah, right? Like, Westerns are great. The problem is, the Westerns that we tend to watch are a very rosy picture of what the West was really like. Like, John Wayne probably wouldn't have lasted all that long in the real Wild West. It was lawlessness. I mean, we think of cowboys as the heroes, but the cowboys were actually the villains in the story. Like, it was, Wild West was wicked. There was no law. People did whatever they wanted. The might made right in the West. And it wasn't until some of the U.S. Marshals and some of the sheriffs finally did start taking control, and that is why we enjoy watching those stories, is we love watching law and order come into an area that was absolute chaos. But it was not an easy fight. It was not one battle in Main Street and now everybody's happy all the time. It was years and years of torment and hard times. And that's exactly how it is in Israel at this point. You hit me, I hit you harder. Because I hit you harder, you come back and hit me harder. And now we're going to start using swords, and now we're going to start throwing rocks. And it just gets worse and worse and worse until we get to this point that Samson, the man who is supposed to be the spiritual, godly leader in Israel, who has been called to a task to punish the Philistines, to destroy the Philistines, is marrying a Philistine woman, leaves her at the altar, goes and burns the crops, and now the woman who is supposed to be his wife is being burned at the stake with her father. This is not a good time in Israel's history. So Samson says to them, if this is what you do, he's mad that they burned his wife. If this is what you do, I swear I will be avenged on you. And after that, I will quit. And he struck them hip and thigh with a great blow. And he went down and he stayed on the cleft of the rock Vitam. So Samson says, you know what? This is enough. I hit you, you hit me, I hit you harder, you hit me harder. We just keep doing this back and forth. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to have the final word. I'm going to be avenged upon you. And after that, I'm going to stop. I'm not going to hit you again. I get to win, and then we're done. So it says he struck them hip and thigh with a great blow. I went and looked this up because I didn't really understand what this was saying. Why would he strike them hip and thigh? So this is a figure of speech that existed at the time. And the idea is that he is punishing them over and above. He is going to punish them. He's going to attack them exceedingly bigly is what it's saying. It's hip and thigh. The idea is I am going to hit you so hard that I am going to cut off your leg at the hip. And then I'm going to decide that I have not cut off your leg enough, so I'm also going to cut off your thigh. Like, that's overkill. Like, once you cut it off at the hip, you don't also then have to cut it off at the thigh. That's too much. You've gone too far. You're too angry. Let it go. So he strikes them hip and thigh with a great blow, and he went down, and he leaves. So he's like, all right, I win. Story over. He runs away. I really wish that was the end of the story of Samson. I really wish it didn't go on for the rest of this week and, oh yeah, all of next week too before we get to the end of Samson. Because if so, maybe, no, there's nothing redeemable about Samson at this point. There's no way we could redeem what he had done at this point already. But the Philistines come up and they encamped in Judah. Guess what? They're not okay with him winning. They haven't said that this is the end of the story. They have said, we're going to keep fighting. So the Philistines came up, and they encamped in Judah and made a raid on Lehi. And the men of Judah said, "Why have you come up against us?" And they said, "We have come up to bind Samson and do to him as he has done to us." We are continuing the eye for the eye motif. But this time, it's not down in Timnah. It's not down in the Philistine land. Now, it's in Israel. Now, the Philistines have come up into Israel, and they are camped in Judah. And then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Etam, that's where Samson is, and says to Samson, "Do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? What then is this that you have done to us?" And he said to them, "As they did to me, so have I done to them." And they said to him, "We have come down to bind you, that we may give you into the hands of the Philistines." And this shows us a tragic mental state of the nation of Israel at this period of time. There were 3,000 men in Judah who had come down to Samson. They had come from the Philistines who had come to bind Samson. They go down to talk to Samson, and they need to point out to him, "Samson, don't you understand that the Philistines are our rulers? Don't you understand that here in Israel, we answer to the Philistines? Don't you understand that the Israelite nation, we answer and we do what the Philistines tell us to do?" Samson's answer to this, if he was going to be a good, righteous judge of Israel, would be like, "Men of Judah, we don't answer to the Philistines. We've never answered to the Philistines. We don't answer to the Philistines now. We answer to God, the God who created the world, the God who got us out of Egypt, the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the God who has been there for us every time we have called out in repentance to him. That's who is our ruler. That is who we serve." And he says, "No," but they say, "The Philistines are our rulers. They have fully accepted this." And Samson's response is not to call them back to God, but to simply say, "Hey, look, I did the same thing to them that they did. We're all the same here." And the sad part is, they are. They are all the same here. They're all just doing whatever is right in their own eyes. They're doing whatever feels natural. They're not paying attention. They're not pursuing after God. They're doing their own thing. So they say that these men of Judah, the Israelites, have come down to bind Samson and hand him over to the Philistines. So Samson says to them, "Swear to me that you will not attack me yourselves." And they said to him, "No, we will only bind you and give you into their hands. We will surely not kill you." So they bound him up with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. So Samson, to his credit, doesn't just kill the 3,000 men who came to bind him. Instead, which, although that is interesting though, 3,000 men, they're going to get one guy. 3,000 men, one guy. Anyway, they were a little afraid that he would attack them, the men of Judah, the people that he was sworn to protect. Anyway, says, "Swear to me that you will not attack me, you're not going to kill me, and I'll go with you. So just tell me that you're not going to attack me, I won't attack you, everybody will be safe, you won't need your 3,000 men, I will go peacefully." They said, "No, we're just going to bind you, we're going to tie you up, and we're going to take you to the people who are going to attack you. We're going to tie you up, and we're going to take you to the people who want to kill you. As long as you're cool with that." And he's like, "Yeah, I'm cool with that. I will do that. As long as you're not going to be the ones to kill me, as long as they're going to be the ones to kill me, I'll go with you." So he does. And when he came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting to meet him. Then the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him, and the ropes that were on his arms became as flax that had caught fire. And his bonds melted off his hands. And he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, and he put out his hand and took it. And with it, he struck 1,000 men. They had every right to be afraid of Samson. There's a reason they took 3,000 men to bind Samson. Because at this point, when he gets to the Philistines, the ones that he has been called by God to destroy, he becomes so empowered with the Spirit of God that the new ropes, the two new ropes that they bound his arms with, he just snaps them. Like it says, like flax that has caught fire. If I don't know if you've ever seen a brush fire, but when a brush fire goes through and burns a field, the stuff that's left behind isn't that strong. You wouldn't want to tie anybody up with what remains after a brush fire. And what it's saying is it's just nothing. He just off. and with a jawbone of a donkey against an army, which would have been swords, would have been likely shields. He puts his hand out, takes it, and he strikes 1,000 men. 1,000 to 1 is insanity. I mean, we're talking Gideon level numbers here again. And with the Spirit of the Lord, he's able to pull it off. And Samson says, with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I have struck down 1,000 men. It says, as soon as he had finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone out of his hand, and that place was called Ramath Lehi. So Samson's response to striking and likely killing 1,000 men is to write a poem. A little poem about, because this is offset. If you're reading along in your Bibles, you may notice that like the line here stops, and then there's a space, and then there's this section about the jawbone of a donkey, and then there's another space, and then what that's indicating is in the Hebrew, that is a poem, a piece of poetry right in the middle of this narrative story. Samson writes a poem, a limerick, about the fact that he just killed 1,000 men with the jawbone of a donkey. Because, hey, that's cool, I guess. And as he finishes speaking, he throws away the jawbone. He's done his work for the day, and he leaves. Except he finds that he's thirsty. This is the writing in scripture that always just makes me chuckle as I go along. He kills 1,000 men. He writes a poem, throws away the jawbone, and he was very thirsty. Because that... you would be, right? You just killed 1,000 people, and that would work up a sweat. That you'd need to be hydrated, as Audrey was talking about. So you'd need Dan's big thing of water there, because that's a lot of work. So he calls out to the Lord. Why? Because he needs something. He says, "You have granted great salvation by the hand of your servant. And shall I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" The arrogance here is kind of shocking to me. Samson has lived his entire life for one person, Samson. Samson does what Samson wants to do. Samson gets what Samson wants to get. If he doesn't, he gets mad, he starts killing people. He totally disregards the commands of God on his life. He is touching dead bodies. He is drinking the wine. He is going through and just whole hog killing people because he's upset that he lost a bet, because the wife that he mistreated is no longer his wife. Like he's just a terrible, terrible person. And now, because he wants a drink, he thinks the God of the universe owes him something. He's like, you just let me beat 1,000 people with a jawbone, acknowledging that it was God's strength that allowed him to do it. But now you're just going to let me die of thirst? You're going to let me die here after... gall to think that he can go to the God of the universe and say, after everything you have done for this nation, after everything you have done for me, and after as terrible as I have lived, you still owe me something. And God split open the hollow place that is at Lehi, and water came out from it. And when he drank, his spirit returned, and he revived. Therefore, the name of it was called Ech HaKori, And it is at Lehi to this day. And he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. Even crazier than the fact that Samson has the gall, the nerve, to call upon God at this period of the time, is the fact that God answers. God actually gives him exactly what he asked for. He gives him the water that he needs. And I really want to be upset about this. But the reality is, when I examine my own life, I'm not too far off of Samson here. Like, for the longest time, I will go through life and I'm like, I've got this under control. I've got everything in my life just fine. I can do this. I don't need anybody else. I don't need God. I'm good. And then I like stub my toe, or like I get a hangnail, and it's so painful that I'm like, God, my hangnail is so terribly painful. Won't you please take away this pain? Maybe if I remember God in the good times, it won't seem so crazy when I have to call out to him in the bad times. Maybe it should be about God all the time and not about me. Maybe I am never actually capable of doing it on my own. Maybe my dependence on God is complete and total. The reality is, it's not a maybe. I know my heart. I know the human condition. I know when Romans teaches us that all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, what it means is we are all equally broken. We have nothing good to offer God on our own. We are 100% dependent on Him all the time. But like Samson, I am guessing many of you are like me in the fact that we don't tend to think about it when things are going well, but only when we're really thirsty, as Samson was. So what? This is a crazy story. This is the end of his judging period. It says that he judges, he rules in the days of the Philistines. What's interesting is that he's judging Israel in the days of the Philistines, as opposed to every other judge before, which drives out the oppressors, and then they lead in peace. Samson judges Israel while the Philistines are still around. They don't actually drive the Philistines out in this case. And he judges Israel in the day, 20 years. So what? So what's the point of this? Why are we continuing to walk down this dark, dark path of judges with Samson this week? Well, one of the things that jumped out to me as I looked through this story is that when God calls us and when God empowers us, we are still capable of doing harm. See, Samson had the call of God on his life. He made it clear from the beginning. Samson's purpose was to defeat the Philistines, to cast them out. And God is the one who empowers Samson through the whole story. It points it out multiple times that God's spirit came upon Samson, giving him the power to do the things he was doing. And yet, in spite of that, Samson uses that power to hurt many, many people, some of whom were Philistines. Some of that was fulfilling the purpose that God called him to, but many others got hurt along the way. When God calls us, when God empowers us to do things, that does not give us open license to hurt the people we come across in our lives. It does not give us open permission to cause harm as we strive to do what we think God has called us to do in the way that we think it should be done. See, we need to stop and we need to ask the question, is it, I've been called to do a thing, but am I doing it in the way that God has called me to do it? Am I calling people back to God in Samson's case? Am I doing what God has called me to do in the way that God has called me to do it? In fact, is the thing I am doing for God something that God actually wants done? Because see, so often we get in our minds the thing that needs to be done, and we have never taken the time to ask, is this the thing that God actually wants me to do? Like, we can get in our eyes, in our minds that God wants me to fulfill this mission in my life because it looks good to me. It looks fun to me. It looks easy to me. It looks difficult to me. We have all our reasons as to why we think God might be calling us to something, but we never actually stop and ask, is this something that God actually wants me to do, or is it just something that I want me to do? Or that I think some other person wants me to do. Because remember, the one we want leading us is God, not ourselves. The one we want leading us is God, not another human being. So we should be talking to God. And I know that the question that this stirs up in us then is, how do I know? If we're going to do a Pest of the Pastor session, and I left it right here, I know that the first question that would come up in that Pest of the Pastor session is, yeah, but how do I know? How do I know the difference? How do I know if I'm just doing it for me or if I'm doing it for God? How do I know if God is the one who wants me to do it or if someone else wants me to do it? I'll give you three answers to that. First, prayer. Have you prayed about it? I don't mean, God, I'm doing this. How do you? No, God, is this something you want me to do? Ask Him. God, confirm for me that this is something that you want me to do. Let me know. Think all the way back to Gideon. Gideon was called by God, empowered by God, and before he went out to do the thing for God, he still confirmed with God, God, I want to be sure that this thing that you are asking me to do is what you actually want me to do. It's a time in prayer, because prayer is designed at its core to make our hearts align with God's heart. So step one is pray about it, and then pray about it some more. Step two, if you're sick of hearing me say this, good. I'm going to keep saying it until everybody joins small group. Your small group, the whole purpose of your small group is to do lives together. If you have prayed about it and then prayed about it some more, You should ask your small group to pray about it too, and ask them to pray about it some more, and then ask for their input. Do you feel like this is something that God has called me to do? Do you think that this is the way that God would want me to do this? Get input from the people in your life who are closest to you, who should be the small group that you're a part of. And then on a broader sense, the church. The church is designed at its core to be a group of people pursuing God together. And from all the way back in the beginning, when the church saw people who were called by God to do a task, to be on mission for God, they came together as a church to commission them and send them out. We still do that today. We do it on the large scale with missionaries. The missionaries that we send out from our church, the missionaries that other churches send out, are commissioned before they go because the church is coming alongside them to say, we have examined you, we have seen the call of God on your life, and we believe that you are making the right decision, so go. Do the mission. The church, small groups, and prayer. These are the ways that we examine whether or not the thing we think we need to be doing for God is actually something we are doing for God. To make sure that the mission, the purpose that he has called us to, aligns with what he desires, and that the way we're doing it is not going to leave people hurt in our wake. As we zealously pursue what God has called us to do, we want to make sure we're not leaving a wake of hurt behind us. And this is how we do it. Let's pray. God,